lot has happened in the 50 years since the Stonewall Riots, when it seemed the only people who courted the gay dollar were the mafia-controlled bars. Since then, the public has grown to embrace queer rights, and now big business is looking to cash in like never before. But is it such a good idea to rely on marketing and PR for your queer liberation?
Today, we're taking a look at how LGBT folks have been the target of marketing campaigns, the corporatization of pride, and pinkwashing to hide a business's evil deeds.
Plus, Miss Black for President, the true story of former Feast of Fools performer Joan Jett Black's campaign for president in 1992, opens at the Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago.
Comedian Pam Ann becomes a pride ambassador for Air Italy, an airline partly owned by the country of Qatar, where LGBT folks face 7 years in prison.
And move over, Ronald. McDonald's has a new clown, Shangela, from RuPaul's Drag Race. Mac Hallaloo, I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. And now, a word from our sponsor. You!
Feast of Fun is made possible because of listeners just like you. Become a Plus member today at feastoffun.com/plus or join us on Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun.
Hey, Pride is just around the corner, and I know you're just dying to get yourself some rainbow merchandise that isn't tied to dirty money. So go to feastoffun.com/store and browse our fabulous rainbow, sassy, and irreverent t-shirts available just in time for Pride. That's feastoffun.com/store. With all her success, it's hard to imagine comedian Ellen DeGeneres hurting for money.
Oh, yeah.
In 2018, she was named by Forbes magazine as one of the top entertainers in the world, ranking her 15 on the chart, earning a whopping $87.5 million just for her talk shows that year. But in 1996, things didn't look so well for the blonde comedian from Louisiana. Her sitcom, The Ellen Show, was struggling, and so she started negotiating with ABC Television for something that had never been done before. Ellen DeGeneres, the person, wanted Ellen DeGeneres, the character, to come out as gay. Not as a lesbian, but as gay. Later on, Ellen graced the cover of Time magazine with the words, "Yep, I'm gay." And you know what? Do you remember the puppy episode?
Yeah, I do remember the puppy episode. Sure.
It was wonderful. It was refreshing. It was funny. It was endearing. It made Ellen a superstar. And despite all that success, the critical and rating success, it suffered great backlash. Advertisers pulled their ads, and then the show was soon canceled. The following year, a new sitcom, Will and Grace, debuted on ABC's rival network, NBC, which, unlike the person Ellen DeGeneres coming out as gay, on Will and Grace, all the characters were openly gay, but the actors in real life were silent on their sexual identity. For the first time on network television, not only did you have gay and bisexual characters as regulars on primetime, advertisers finally had said yes to the pink dollar, honey. And now today, we're going to be looking at a lot of marketing, a lot of crazy stuff that has unfolded since the Stonewall Riots of 1969, from Ellen coming out in 1997 to the launching of the Rainbow Bag of Doritos in 2016. Is it a good idea to invest so heavily on advertising and public relations for LGBTQ equality? What do you think about that?
That question, we were talking a little bit of this before the show started, and I'm kind of confused as well. What do you mean by that question?
Mm. Well, we have to dial back the clock here and go back into 1969 and the Stonewall Riots. Mm-hmm. How did LGBT people communicate with each other? We really didn't have a lot of ways to share information. You know, if you think about Oscar Wilde and in Victorian England, they would write like secret letters to each other and pass them around. But something started happening in the years shortly after the Stonewall Riots. A lot of adult magazines or physique pictorials started running advertisings for queer people to find each other, sort of personal ads. And these publications started evolving to becoming some of the first LGBT press. And so you started having all these magazines and newspapers that were created just to combat the demonization that we were facing in the public. It was literally a PR attempt to win us over and to inform each other about the dangers that we face as LGBT people. This was way, way, way before the AIDS crisis even came down the river, you know, and put us in so much danger. And as a result of that, a couple of organizations, one, Rivendell Media, was created in 1978, was put out there to literally sell LGBT people to large businesses and corporations as the power of the gay dollar. There was literally there was an ad where the guy's like flexing his biceps wearing a suit. And it was like, the power of the gay dollar advertised in this publication.
Well, they thought of gay people back then in the 80s as being very affluent, right? That they were double income, no kids.
Well, it was kind of a lie that was actually perpetuated mm-hmm. by a lot of marketing campaigns like Rivendell Media. And their idea was like, let's fudge the numbers a little bit, because the greater goal was to find the money to pay for the printing bills, mm-hmm. to pay for journalists to write and advocate for the well-being of LGBTQ people. And so you later had publications like The Advocate running ads in their back page for vodka. Absolute Vodka was one of the first mm-hmm. advertisers to sort of latch into the LGBT market. And it caused a great commotion, because a lot of people were like, well, hold on a second. Who's getting all this money and where's it going to, right? Because it's like a lot of the early pride parades were mostly just volunteer work.
Sure. It was volunteers and people going through, and they weren't really... it wasn't as corporate, and eventually you just saw more people coming into that corporate frame. But when you're talking about like these advertisements in newspapers and things, you know, they have to make some money to pay the bills, like you said. And they presented this information as though like this queer people are these rich people with a bunch of ton of money. And that might reflect the readership of that particular magazine, but it did not in any way reflect queer people as a whole. As a whole, queer people are economically disadvantaged.
Well, there's one study that said 40%, I mean, when you're talking about the youth, LGBT youth market, mm-hmm. If you're going to be advertising to them in this day and age, this is a study that was done in 2017, 40% of homeless youth are LGBT, mm-hmm. whereas in terms of the total youth market, LGBT folks only make 5% of that. And in terms of how much money we're actually making, a Forbes study said that transgender people, adults, are the most likely to be living in poverty in the United States, have a 15% unemployment rate. And in terms of like our heterosexual counterparts, mm-hmm. Gay men make significantly less than heterosexual men, and lesbians make significantly less than women do. So in terms of like, you know, portraying ourselves as this sort of like people with a lot of disposable income, it's not a wise strategy, I think, because of the fact that it can be used quickly against us, and it's not based on any reality. Mm-hmm. It's not based on our needs as mm-hmm. a community.
Well, and one of the most evil things to come out of that whole idea of gays being super rich is this idea that when we're asking for our rights, the idea that we were asking for special rights, that somehow because we're these affluent gays that just jet set between, you know, Paris and Shanghai, that we don't need any kind of rights because we're rich and we're wealthy. And so it became an idea of like, you're asking for something, then it's special rights. And those kind of like special rights held us back for years.
It's an interesting symbol, the rainbow, mm-hmm. Because it was something that was meant to be inclusive of everyone. It was a flag that was the initial flag had eight. Was
it had pink in it, too.
It pink in it and other colors,
but
you know.
Pink, they got rid of the pink because they couldn't get the fabric.
They couldn't get the fabric that year, so they were like, okay, now it's seven. And then mm-hmm. the following year, they're like, yeah, that looks weird. Let's do six. And this six-stripe rainbow flag has for decades been used by all these corporations to slap it on a product and sell it to people. You know, mm-hmm. you think about, like, Absolut Vodka. those ads are ubiquitous. And, you know, we came of age seeing bottles of vodka designed by artists and, you know, focusing on sort of like countercultural figures. You think about like LA Iwerks with their ad campaign. This started in the late 80s. You had Katie Lang, RuPaul, Divine, Andy Warhol, Grace Jones, some really amazing artists and queer personalities, John Waters, portrayed in their ad campaign, a face is like a work of art. It deserves a great frame. And these provocative, they call them provocative personalities, were captured in these photo ads and, you know, were seen everywhere. And I thought actually this sort of draws attention to the fact that, you know, LA, what is it, rainbow marketing or LGBTQ marketing can not necessarily be a plus or a minus. It can actually be a very complicated thing. It can actually expose to the world these underrepresented or unknown, you know, provocative personalities, but these are people and artists that we celebrate. Someone like Jimmy James, his ad campaign of him as Marilyn Monroe, the photo wound up being used by the country of Central Africa for a stamp. And in 2017, he turned around and threatened legal action to the country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You'd have thought he would have liked getting licked by all those Central African men.
Ooh, and women.
Stuck on those envelopes.
But no, you know, it was the country of Central Africa was using, you know, I'm not sure how they
mistake.
It was a mistake.
Yeah. Because they're just like, well, you know, one blonde bombshell looks like another, right?
And, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast through years, like all these weird products that popped up and caused people to just have commotions one way or another. And you think about, you know, pride parades. Pride parades have sort of devolved and been criticized into being these expos on wheels where booth babes on a float throw out little pieces of merchandise into the crowds. And then what you're left with is a bunch of junk littering the streets and the taxpayers in the community footing the bill to allow these corporations to market to ourselves.
And to throw that garbage everywhere. The best thing to do, like, after the Pride Parade is, like, you know, when you stick around, there's all the garbage on the street. Foster likes to go around and tell people, okay, time to start cleaning this up. And they look at you like you're crazy. But, I mean, like, literally, I wish they would weigh the amount of trash that gets thrown out at the Pride Parade here in town. Because, like, it's a mountain of garbage, of beads, of cards, of all this stuff.
But that happens in all, you know, rowdy parades and celebrations. Sure. Even rock concerts have that.
I think they cleaned the sewers out in New Orleans and they found, like, I don't know, like 2 tons of like Mardi Gras beads in there. And they're just like, this is too much. This is too much. But, you know, I think early on too, when you look at like the marketing, I mean, when you look at who advertised to gay people in the beginning, they say it was really the physique models, the magazines that came out in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. That was the first people that really kind of targeted a gay market, and they did pretty well for themselves. And a lot of those people went on to open up different businesses, and even like Chuck Renslow, who's the founder of IML here in Chicago, who's now dead, that was his one of his first things was mail order pictures of men wearing little kind of posing straps, covering up their junk, but otherwise in very provocative attire. And he actually had to go to court, you know, because they were trying to say that this was indecent material. And, you know, they won, and so they were able to do that. And he was on to go on to invest in, like, you know, men's bathhouses and gay bars. And now we have the Leather Archives and Museum because of him.
But also Chuck Renslow was one of the founders of the first gay publications in the world. And, you know, one of the advertisers in those early magazines and physique magazines was Charles Atlas, you know, a weakling weighing 98 pounds, got sand in his face when kicked to the ground.
Groined. But you know what, Dan, I sometimes go over to the Gerber Hart Library here in town, and I've looked at like old gay publications. And when you look at the advertisements in there, it was mostly just for like the bathhouses and the gay bars at that point in time. And then I think you slowly see some creep in there into, like, you know, do you want to buy a car? You know, the auto sales, or maybe they do need a lawyer because you got busted having sex in the bathroom.
Yeah, from I think it was from 2001 to 2006, I worked for Chicago Free Press, which at the time was one of the largest gay publications in the country. And every year for Pride, that publication would balloon four times the size of the publication just to make space for all the advertisers who wanted to put their ad in, because people from all around the Midwest would come to Chicago and pick up a copy of the newspaper and go through that ad and be exposed to different marketing, you know. And one of the big marketers, actually, ironically, was the pharmaceutical industry. And not necessarily in such a, you know, like, use Sativa or I don't know what.
It was a lot of AIDS meds, right?
It was all the AIDS meds. And part of it was also to try to control the narrative of what these publications could and couldn't say. And, you know, these publications and a lot of activists were have all this time have been pushing for universal health care and for negotiating the price of these very expensive medications as a way to effectively fight the AIDS epidemic.
Well, so Big Pharma has to advertise when they have different pills out there, and because there's side effects and things. And so they must put it in the public record somewhere. And
they did. And they've moved since then and not doing it so much. They do more online advertising since then.
But they, you know, they still do stuff in the gay magazines, but you're saying that a lot of this was they also put it in those magazines specifically to control their voice.
Correct. Yeah. And you know, with even some going as blatantly to sending out articles for them to run, or like, you know, it was a very cynical time in some regards. And you know, this is something that's disputed a lot. Whether that advertising money, which kept these publications afloat, also sort of compromised them politically. Politicians, both progressive and somewhat conservative, that were courting urban LGBT voters would run ads. And, you know, certainly, like, you can argue what has been the debate on marijuana legalization, but these liquor companies have poured endless amounts of money into running liquor ads in these publications, with part of the agenda is to driving people away from talking about the legalization of marijuana. We may have, you know, our community may have advocated early on for a lot of progressive ideas, but we were also compromised politically because a lot of these gay publications were being targeted in a sense to, you know, control the narrative. And then with the rise of the internet, I think that disrupted a lot of things, you know. I think a lot of, what is it, a lot of corporations started running their own advertising and targeted, they call them verticals, right? They were trying to target LGBT people through the Huffington Post, through NBC, through Condé Nast, the New York Times, BuzzFeed. And again, I think it was mostly to control the conversation to LGBT people, not necessarily to serve their needs. And in this last couple of years, we've started to see a lot of these verticals disappear all of a sudden overnight. Like, look at Grindr, the way they just pulled their whole Into project.
Yeah, Into More, right?
Yeah, and I expect a lot of that to disappear overnight. And if the minute that they can't make money off of it, they're going to drop you on your ass, because not interested in serving your needs. They're interested in your money. And that's a very different thing.
Well, and we're seeing a lot of turmoil in the gay media online and in print. See, there's a lot of places like Huffington Post. They have Queer Voices. And yes, it still exists, but I don't think they have even one reporter dedicated to a queer beat at this point in time.
Honey, we're just a husband. What is it? The Chicago Reader actually gave us an award one year as the best LGBT media organization in Chicago.
Oh, they did?
You don't remember? You actually accepted it.
I
were there. Yeah, I have photographs of
at
you.
The Reader?
Yeah, the Chicago Reader gave us an award.
Oh. And it's not on the piano with the other
They didn't
awards.
Give us a physical award. It was a certificate.
Well, does it count then?
Well, I think the point is that, you know, we're a very modest husband organization, and with very modest resources. And it's something to be said that in, I think it was the 2007, the award that we were given, that, you know, we were seen as a vital voice, as a vital countercultural voice in speaking to the needs of LGBT people and not monetizing them at that point in time. And to me, it was just like, you know, baby, where are we right now? It's like, we're in such a complicated, messed up, world, and I see so many people just demanding the ending of Pride in general. Look at these kind of crazy
people don't want like the Pride parade. They're saying no more Pride.
Cancel Pride altogether. Which to me, I'm like, I love a good party, honey.
Well, so now we need Pride even more because now they're starting a straight Pride in Boston later this summer. Somebody got a permit for a straight Pride.
Isn't that Mardi Gras?
I don't know, but this guy has also been like known to make some anti-Semitic and anti-immigrant comments too, so
that's gonna we'll be a lot goes. Of fun.
Yeah,
you remember the Skittles giving up the rainbow and giving it back to LGBT people in June of 2016?
I do remember that, yes.
And a friend of mine who I don't want to say their name because they are involved in that company said it was a very difficult ad campaign, that the business didn't feel that they got their money back.
Oh, for no it.
Yeah, which was a really strange thing because, you know, people love that candy because of its colors and its bright flavors
and its tartness.
And so when you take away that color, it's like people are left going, what the fuck is this shit? You
know? What is this? Might as well be eating mashed potatoes, right?
On Pride, which is something you did.
I remember in sixth grade, we had a sister, Patrick. She was saying that they were using Yes detergent. We were using the rainbow to sell the detergent. And they were using it because it was the rainbow was God's promise not to flood the earth again. And the instead of like, oh, maybe you have a rainbow because you want bright colors, that she was thinking it was they were using religion to sell this detergent. And no, maybe they were.
Possibly. I mean, the rainbow means a lot of different things to different cultures, you know. But I think at this point, you know, the rainbow has been an essential symbol to galvanize marginalized people in terms of their sexual and gender identity. And so in the recent years, we started seeing all these corporations just launching almost cynically these products, like Rainbow Doritos was very controversial when it was released. I think it was 2014. And even Dan Savage spoke out against it, saying that he had nothing to do with it.
Why would he have anything to do with it?
Because the Doritos Corporation said a portion of the proceeds of the Rainbow Doritos bag went to It Gets Better. Okay. And they were like, we are? We don't know anything about this. So it was a really weird ad campaign. It was a publicity stunt. But they actually did manufacture bags of different colored, you know, tortilla chips. Meanwhile, Oreos in 2012, the Nabisco Corporation, released advertising that instead of double stuffed, it was six stuffed in rainbow colors Oreo cookies, which, you know, had this backlash on the internet like we never saw before, with people just wanting to cancel Oreos, both you know, not necessarily conservatives but also progressives, just saying, what the fuck is this tomfoolery?
Well, the thing is, I think most of the time when people venture into the gay marketplace and they do a little rainbow thing, they're really not putting that much at risk, because if people like the product and they're using the product anyway, they'll just probably buy the non-gay version of it, because it's not like it's going to go totally gay or it's going to turn anybody gay. So you can still buy the original Oreos if that's really what you want.
Well, I mean, you think about, like, you know, Barbie releasing the earring magic Ken. That was almost like a happy accident where they actually created a product that looked like a homosexual at the time, right? And people, it's the number one best-selling Barbie doll of all time.
More so than Earring Magic. More so than the real Barbie?
More so than the real Barbie. Earring Magic Ken outsold anything ever it has. Like, they snatched it up. The people
but he wasn't really intended to be outwardly gay, right?
No, it was you know, the designers knew what they were doing, and they were sort of, you know, fucking with Barbie, because, you know, at that time, and I would say a lot of gay men to this day really love their Barbies, and so they try to pull a fast one on Mattel, and of course, you know, people were like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, they didn't understand what it was. He's modern, he's updated, he's wearing an earring.
You know, and part of it is, like, I think of these corporations know what they're getting into. They're pouring millions of dollars into these advertising campaigns, and they understand that this stuff is going to get people talking. And brand awareness is, even if it's negative brand awareness, is something that a lot of companies want, you know. I mean, the whole Kardashians build their careers on brand awareness, even when it's negative,
even when people hate them.
Even especially when people hate them.
And so the idea is, like, you put out something rainbow. It's, you know, great if it appeals to the gay people or not. But what it does do is it makes an explosion, it makes a splash. So people that may have an affinity for gay people might support the product. So like a 13-year-old girl who loves her RuPaul's Drag Race drag queens might buy something because it's gay adjacent.
Well, we're starting to see like makeup companies releasing makeup products specifically targeted to people who want to dress up and paint themselves up as drag queens with when we're ever, you know, heterosexual women concerned with contouring until the Kardashians started doing that, you know, and the Kardashians took it from drag queens. And if you go to like, you know, any makeup superstore these days, there's plenty of, you know, brilliant colors and sparkling and magic and all kinds of things that really, you know, are probably best used by drag queens, but you know, that drag makeup is now mainstream. If you go to Target, you go to Kohl's, you go to a lot of these, you know, clothing superstores at this time of year, you're going to see like love wins and love is love and all this stuff. And that's taking money away from people like us. You know, people don't buy as much Feast of Fun t-shirts today because Target saw us making money and said, you know what, Feast of Fun, you got that. I want that too.
I want that too.
and there was this, I think there's this interesting thing, like, you know, a lot of rainbow merchandise used to be sold by community owned businesses in our neighborhoods. Gay Mart here in Chicago, which, you know, had all kinds of wonderful tchotchkes. It was a great place to bring your family to marvel at all these weird stuff, closed up because, you know, a lot of these big box stores released their own LGBT merchandise and not necessarily giving it back to the community. They just pocketed it.
Well, and also too, there's so much, you know, people buying that kind of stuff online these days. And so
it's Cafe hard, Press, honey.
It's hard for people to do like that brick and mortar anymore. So the Gay Marts are just, they can't sustain it in this kind of climate.
Now, one thing that a lot of gay communities have done, and, you know, I think this is sometimes cynical, sometimes sincere, is creating LGBT rainbow monuments in the forms of flags or pylons or rainbow crosswalks. And with the goal to saying, this is the gay neighborhood in the city. We're no longer nomadic. We're no longer moving around. This is it for all time.
And, you know, there's problems, I think, that kind of come with that, too. And I believe that, you know, you should, in some ways, you should stay where you're planted. And I, you know, I applaud Boys Town for getting a recognition from the city as a designated gayborhood. I believe it was the first place in the United States that actually had that, maybe even the world. I don't know. But and since then, other places have gotten it. You know, the nature of a gay neighborhood, though, has typically been mobile. It's been people come, they move into a neighborhood, they have their gay bars, they have their thing, and it becomes ephemeral, and then it moves on to another place. And that's how our culture has worked mostly, you know, since, you know, since the early 1900s.
But don't,
you know,
we deserve to stay in the neighborhoods we helped to improve?
We do deserve to stay in the neighborhoods that we helped to improve, for sure. When you look at something like Boys Town, you look at something like the Castro, but also, too, is that our culture, though, is to stay? Is it, or is our culture to move on, to create new things?
Well, part of it beyond, is, I think, is this idea, and I put this idea out there, is that, you know, LGBTQ liberation is sexual liberation. And sexual liberation means making space and time for people to express their sexuality, to have the food, the housing, the life, the free time to explore their sexuality. Or, you know, even asexuality is a sexuality, right? Yeah. And so when your business, when your world is relying on the exploitation of human beings, those two things are polar opposites. When you don't want to give people health, universal health care, because you want to keep your minimum wage down, you want to keep people working at your company because they rely on the minimum wage that they're getting from that company, or when you want to fight against the minimum wage increase to give people enough free time to not maybe even have to work full time. You know, this idea that you have to work 5 days a week is ludicrous. You know, in an ideal world, I think we would work 3 days a week.
Well, I think also, too, a big reason why conservatives are so anti-gay is because they, you know, they read somebody like Karl Marx, and Karl Marx says that, you know, that capitalism relies on the family unit, a man being married to a woman and then having children, and that they become slaves to the system, to the mm-hmm. industrial system. They read something like that and they believe it. They're like, well, if that's the tantamount of what the industrial world is, then we really have to go gung-ho. And they're trying to preserve that, because to them, you know, the husband and wife and their kids, those are their workforce that they can control, because, you know, the husband is tied to the wife and the kids are tied to the mother. And so he's forced to support her, and she supports him and the kids, and so they become units for them to control. And when you take that out of the equation, when you just say, hey, here's two dudes, you know, people are, you know, that falls outside of that purview. And so these are people that are, like, in many ways escapees, and they're like, no, we have to bring them back into this system of corporate of capitalism.
But when you want to look at the last 50 years mm-hmm. of liberation since Stonewall, mm-hmm. and you want to draw attention to moments in those 50 years where people were creating a strong culture, mm-hmm. a strong culture that fights against Trumps and mm-hmm. flat earthers and anti-vaxxers and superstition and vain despots, hell bent on controlling and consolidating power and money. That strong culture comes when people have the free time and mm-hmm. money to express themselves and
sure.
to let their freak flag fly freely and fuck a little. Mm-hmm.
But if you're working all the time, you don't have time to fight the system, right?
Well, and sex can be used to sell anything and to exploit people. Sex can be used to make people make bad decisions. You know, there's a reason why. I know this sounds crazy, but any conservative politician, any progressive politician always has a sexy photo of them somewhere. Even Putin is on, you know, mm-hmm. shirtless on a horseback. And part of it is, like, sexuality is a tool that you know, advertising and businesses can use to co-opt, to consolidate, to recapture any kind of progressive idea that they can. You know, and despite all this, I think it's also a luxury to be able to criticize these businesses as being cynical or only greedy in the impact of their advertising campaign. I think it, you know, these rainbow marketing campaigns do get seen in third world countries and in regressive communities and nations. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that, you know, sexual liberation, when the true sexual liberation reaches people, it helps to alleviate pain and suffering.
So that little kid, like, shopping in the supermarket with their mom and sees something that's rainbow, and she's just like, oh my God, I can buy gayness at a store.
Well, it's a dangerous argument to make when we rely on advertising and PR for our equality. We run the risk of being colonialists. Mm. It only works. Sexual liberation only works when it is tied to the culture that it's stemming from, and it's not something that's imposed upon other people. And if you look at, like, a lot of backlash against LGBTQ equality in other countries and regressive communities, mm-hmm. it's usually like those liberal Westerners mm-hmm. with their liberal, you know, mm-hmm. and part of it is because we're not allowing those communities and cultures to find their voice,
to find it organically. But also too, we're also influencing them on the other side. When you look at a lot of these anti-gay African countries, or, you know, in Eastern Europe, we're sending a lot of our conservative missionaries over there, and they're dictating a lot of these anti-gay views and mm-hmm. bringing that into them, be like, this is our church, this is our beliefs, you know, and also, you know, please be anti-gay. And they're like, okay,
you know. And even our own community can do horrible mistakes. You remember the Franken-Gay STI awareness campaign mm-hmm. From the Illinois Department of Public Health in 2010?
Oh yeah,
that was an ad that was way off the mark, and it was called "He's the One," and had a photo of four men's faces that look terrifying. They're not smiling. They look angry. And basically to, you know. And,
well, they were cut up and put together. So yes. You look like you had this Frankenstein face. And it was like, this is the guy who's going to give you, was it HIV or what was
He's
it?
The one who could infect you.
He was the one who could infect you.
He's the one.com.
Like, and so what it did, it villainized people with living with HIV and made people, like, appear as, like, having sex with a gay man is like having sex with a monster.
And when you went to he's the one.com, you registered on the site to receive awareness materials mm-hmm. and win a free iPad.
Oh, wow.
And so our brilliant listeners decided to do a contest on our website that's still there, where people cut out the Frankengay head and started photoshopping them onto all kinds of, you know, hilarious moments. So one winner actually photographed them all into the Mickey Mouse Club. So it was really great, you know, and I think that's when our community really shines, is that when we take, you know, negative or sad or tragic or demonizing materials, even if they come from our own community, and we transform them into something that, one, really does raise awareness. You know, STIs are something that we need to be thinking about and protecting ourselves and, you know, taking the getting on PrEP, getting tested, encouraging the use of condoms, of course, but not make people think of gays as sick. And I think that, you know, that was a disappointment. This is where our community was failed us, because these ad ran on the back of these LGBT publications, and nobody along the steps of the way said, this is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. This is not going to accomplish anything. Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I saw it, I was just like, this is horrible.
Yeah.
You know,
and another ad campaign that just was a catastrophe for the brand and for the message was Kendall Jenner's Pepsi commercial that ran in 2017. Now, the ad includes visibly trans people of color, asking them to join the conversation in dealing with violence directed towards them from the public and the police.
Because the main criticism of this was that it capitalized on the Black Lives Matter movement, or, you know, co-opted that. And, you know, and so they're asking these trans people of color to please join the conversation. It was like, bitch, we've been talking about this for a long time. You know, we're one of the people that are the most victimized by society. Join the conversation. Honey, we are the conversation.
Excuse me, officer. Would you mind beating me up?
And so they pulled that
ad. What kind of conversation can you have?
You know, they pulled that ad very quickly, didn't they? After the
backlash. It's one of the most hated videos on YouTube. The video also features a woman wearing a headscarf, frustrated with her photo essay project. She goes out into a Black Lives Matter-like-ish demonstration, where has people holding the signs that says, join the conversation, not, you know, fuck the police or something like that. And finally, her problems are solved when she captures the perfect photograph of Kendall Jenner giving a sexy police officer a Pepsi.
Aww.
And then the caption underneath says, live louder, live bolder. Now, what I would really like to have seen is the police officer pull out his baton and, you know, gave him, bitch, I wanted Coke. you know,
police
people
brutality.
hated this message. Mm. And Pepsi quickly apologized for it. But it draws attention to this idea. It's like, we got to be really careful. You know, when Burger King debuts a Pride Whopper, it's important that Pride Whopper is available everywhere, because LGBT people are everywhere. In June of 2014, Burger King started selling a rainbow wrapped sandwich, the Whopper, only in San Francisco.
The gay city.
You know, and I'm just like, you know, the last person that needs to open up a Whopper and says, we're just like everyone else.
It's San Francisco.
It's San Francisco, you know, and that country has all kinds of inequality. Mm-hmm. It would have been more interesting if Burger King actually gave Whoppers out to the homeless or, you know, and when these businesses don't start paying their people a living wage or giving their employees health care. What's the point of these rainbow marketing campaigns? It's not to raise equality. It's to raise inequality. It's to allow these businesses to stay in benefiting from a dysfunctional system.
Well, in some ways, it's pinkwashing, right?
Yeah. What is pinkwashing exactly?
Pinkwashing is when you use LGBT people to like hide your misdeeds.
I thought it was when you leave a red sock in the wash and everything comes up pink.
Well, that can be the same too,
right? And it's just a pain in the ass either way.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the one thing, you can just use a little bit of bleach to get some of that out. But, you know, with the other, you're not. And so, you know, you'll have big corporations that might, you know, be funneling money to like anti-gay organizations, but then they'll slap a rainbow flag on something and be like, look, aren't we wonderful? Like, kind of thing. And I think one of the biggest people, one of the biggest places to get criticized for pink washing these days is the state of Israel, because of their treatment towards the Palestinian people. But then they're just like, hey, but look, gays here have wonderful rights. And so Israel is a wonderful place. And it's like, OK, you know, it's great. I'm glad Israel does have, you know, gay rights and where people can get married and adopt and have kids and all that kind of stuff like that. But, you know, maybe consider, you know, treating your citizens better.
Palestinian people, what is it? LGBT people are also Palestinian people, too. And part of it is like, you know, our liberation is tied to other people's liberation. Mm-hmm. If we don't succeed when others are oppressed. Mm-hmm.
And one company that's, you know, is considered is pink washing these days is Air Italy, who's just had comedian Pam Ann, who the gays love. She's their pride ambassador. Now, Air Italy is owned by 49% from Qatar Airlines, which is mostly owned by the country of Qatar, which, like, if you're gay in Qatar, they can send you to jail for, like, you know, 7 years.
So Pam Ann posted that on social media. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm so proud to be the brand ambassador for Air Italy. And honey, all the queens took off their earrings and said, girl, take that cynical money and run with it.
Oh, they did?
They did not hold back.
Oh, so they're supporting her taking the money?
Well, they were like, take the money, but honey, do not think that we're going to be, you know, buying this shit.
Yeah.
And you know, tragically or sadly, Pam Ann just deleted all their comments.
Oh, really?
And never addressed it. Well, and I'm just kind of like, this is why you can't rely on cisgendered, you know, straight identifying people be allies. Sometimes you need to get, you know, and listen, they're people who will sell out anywhere in any shape or form. And I believe that Pam Ann needs the money. And so take the money and run, girl. But, you know, at the same time, next year, maybe make a statement talking about how fucked up that is. Just saying, just the thought. I mean, Mark and I, you and I have,
I would take the money from Aaron Lee, but I
we got $600 to be in a float in Pride with associate ourselves with Trojan condoms. That was great. And I was like, this is how we celebrate Pride, by supporting LGBTQ artists and people. And I love that experience. Now, they didn't invite us again next year, but I felt like, it, you know, they appreciated our presence in the parade. And I felt that that was great. And I love it when these corporations and the businesses actually invest in LGBTQ people, when they put LGBTQ people in positions of power and leadership, and they invest in them. That's what the change I want to see.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge important thing. You know, if you're going to support LGBT equality, it's like, okay, you can slap this rainbow on your product and stuff like that. But how about, you know, giving your proceeds to the product to an organization that's working for equality? You know, I know many people, many corporations have done that, but others haven't. They're just like, make it gay and keep all the coin tatas.
What about McDonald's new clown, Shangela, from RuPaul's Drag Race?
Move over, Ronald. There's a new clown in town.
I love the ad, and
celebrity,
I thought it was cute.
Entertainer.
I was expecting it to be this sort of, you know, just Mary J. Blige, Burger King mess. But, you know, Shangela is just so charming.
She's, you know, helping people get it together and getting their breakfast together. I also think it's interesting that it's, you know, the ad is not just with Shangela, but Shangela as a RuPaul's Drag Race girl.
Oh, you know? so there's like a tie-in to like, RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah, like there's a tie-in there too. So it's not just celebrity entertainer Shangela by herself. She doesn't call herself a drag queen.
No, she doesn't.
She doesn't.
But, I'm a drag queen.
But I think it's pretty clear that she is, right?
Well, that's the thing about it is it's like if somebody wants to believe that Shangela isn't a man in a dress, they can. There's nothing there challenging them, except maybe Shangela's low voice. But otherwise, it's hallelujah. It's
Mick Hallelujah.
Mac Hallelujah.
Mick Hallelujah.
And to me, I'm like, maybe this is the future of Ronald McDonald. You know, certainly you see like hamburger chains like Hamburger Mary's or, you know, a restaurant chain like Lips. And there's other businesses that do that where they're
when
starting.
Is that Lips Chicago even opening? Does anybody know?
We don't know, but you know, I think they've had some trouble getting their feet, you know, off the ground. But there is money to be made in latching your business to the drag explosion. But the trouble with that is a lot of people are left behind. And people, it's this idea, and I think that's what a lot of trans people sort of are resentful to them being associated with entertainers or drag queens, mm-hmm. is because our liberation should not depend on our ability to get on a reality TV show. Mm. You know, it's like, I see how many young people that I know that are like, have no long-term future plans because they're wanting to be a contestant on some reality TV show because they want to become an Instagram brand ambassador. And I'm like, look, you know, equality means that you are worthy and deserving of food and shelter and healthcare and good food, good shelter, good healthcare just by your existence. You are deserving of that. That's the tenets of Christianity. That's what Mr. Mm-hmm. Rogers talked about. And to advocate against that is hypocrisy. You know, one drag queen that certainly made a huge commotion in the late 80s and early 90s, before RuPaul's Drag Race, before even RuPaul went on the scene.
Before Supermodel, right?
Supermodel was a drag queen named Joan Jett Black. And she performed with us in Feast of Fools a while back.
And actually lived with you for a short period.
For a short period of time. And, you know, we parted ways. And now in 2019, Steppenwolf Theater with Terrell Alvin McCraney from the Moonlight film Moonlight and Tina Landau, the director of SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical. They are now have a play called Miss Black for President, which chronicles the true story of the first black queen, first, you know, black drag queen of anything to run for president, and also to step foot on the Democratic National Convention floor. In full drag. Mm-hmm.
Well, and originally she had run for mayor of Chicago against Richard Daley and, you know, of course, you know, lost. But then she worked with, Queer Nation you know, and it was called a camp pain because it was a campy campaign.
Emphasis,
you
know, on the pain, yeah. Too.
And it was, you know, it was a farcical campaign, but it was meant to draw attention to people dying from AIDS.
And I think a show like Miss Black for President can only exist in this day and age. It was interesting. We went to the opening night last night and were reunited with Joan Jett Black and Taylor E. Ross. And, you know, it was like Taylor E. Ross was the Not So Secret Service, her musician and
musical director
that helped Joan's stage show happen. And it was really great to have the gang back together to some degree. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like seeing the audience, they were just like, there's a danger when your biography or your life or your history gets turned into a movie or a play that people don't treat it as if it really happened. They almost treat it as a work of fiction. Mm-hmm. And it really, to me, was really evident in the party afterwards. We're socializing with everybody. And, you know, Joan Jett Black, out of drag, is hanging out in the lobby. And people are just like, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. And then Terrell Alvin McCraney comes down and everyone's like, Joan Jett Black, we love you. And I'm like, this is the real Joan Jett Black. This is an actor portraying Joan Jett Black in a show. Wouldn't you like to have your photo taken with the real Joan Jett Black? I mean, both are wonderful people. Mm-hmm. Terrell Alvin McCraney is an amazing legend. And at the same time, you know, you might want to share the loves, to so to speak. It was
well,
really...
Well, people saw Terrell on stage for an hour and a half. You know what I mean? So that's why there's that attachment. You know, with Joan Jett Black, he was sitting in the audience. Sure, he stood up and waved and stuff, but it wasn't the same relationship.
Well, it made me think of What's Love Got to Do with It? When Tina Turner's life was brought into the motion picture world, right? And you had Angela Bassett doing this amazing portrayal of Tina Turner. And at the very end of it, we actually see the real Tina Turner. Mm. And in some ways, you know, like seeing the real Joan Jett Black at the very end, it had to happen. Mm-hmm. But it was a tricky situation because in some ways it diminishes the efforts of Terrell Alvin McCraney. Yet at the same time, it doesn't make us deeply appreciate the contributions and the history of the actual Joan Jett Black. Mm. And so it's a difficult thing that happens whenever you ever have a biography turned into a play or a film.
Well, hopefully we're going to get to talk to Terrence more about it. So when he comes on the podcast, is it like next week or the week after? Hopefully.
Well, you're going to be out of town.
I'm going to be out of town. I'm taking my mom, who's 94 years old, to Providence, Rhode Island. So I should be there like Friday and Saturday of this week. So if anybody's out there, you know, hit me up on Facebook or write
Mark
to me.
Felian.
Mark Felian on Facebook. Or email me at mail at Feast of Fun, and maybe we can meet up. I'm going to take her to go see an old college classmate of hers.
It's really nice that you're spending some time with your mom and getting to know her better. You know, I always tell people, if you ever have the opportunity with your parents as they get into their silver years, to be alone with them in a car or in a room and just express gratitude, you know, now's not the time to be like, why did you do this for me? Yeah. But, you know, your parents do become a very, they get into a very childlike stage where they start throwing temper tantrums. They want to eat a certain time. They're, you know, they have to get their diapers changed.
Thanks.
And part of it is it's important for us who received caring and nurturing from our parents to be able to express that gratitude. Mm. It's healing for us. And our parents may not have always understood or embraced or sometimes been very antithetical, opposed to our well-being as LGBTQ people. But it's now the time to forgive and to create a space to talk. And if they're willing to listen and most of all, express some kind of gratitude.
Well, without a doubt. You know, it's my mother was there for me in the beginning of my life, and I want to be there for her in the end of her life. She's 94. I mean, her aunt lived to be 102, but there's no guarantees, you know?
And you guys both enjoy kind of a road trip and, you know, and seeing the... At this time of year, it's like the northeast side of the country is cooler and more refreshing, and you can stop by the side of the road and get some berries, eat some peaches and apples.
It'll be fun. It'll be fun.
I'm going to miss you so much, Mark.
Oh, I'll miss you too, but I'll be back. I'll be back next week, and we'll have more podcasts to come and more celebrations of Pride. And yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, remember, folks, you know, your liberation is dependent on other people's liberation. Got to liberate the body and mind. And that way you can liberate the world. Sex can and is used to sell anything, including our own oppression. But sexual liberation means creating a space and time for everybody to express their lives and their identities however they seem fit.
Aww.
So fight the power, honey. Happy anniversary. 50 years of Stonewall. And pass me some of those rainbow-colored candies. We love you so much.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone. Bye-bye.